Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to this Friday issue of Catholic Answers Live. So happy to have you with us. I'm super fired up for this Friday edition here. We've got a great, great second hour for you with Christopher Bloom is going to be here from the Augustine Institute to talk about his new book, A Mind at Peace, Reclaiming an Ordered Soul in the Age of Distraction. A really important, important work. And we're just delighted that he's going to close out the week with us. We're less thrilled about the first hour. No, that's not really true. We have a wonderful first hour guest. This hour, we talk about sharing your faith with clarity, calm, and joy with the man who does it all the time, Brandon Vaught. Brandon is, as you probably know, a best-selling Catholic author and a blogger and a speaker and runs these websites like strangenotions.com where atheists and Catholics talk to one another. And he's the content director for Bishop Robert Barron's Word on Fire Catholic Ministries. Brandon Vaught, thanks for being with us.
It's always a joy to be here with you, Cy. Thank you.
I enjoy you and Bishop Barron together on the weekends on my local Catholic radio station so much. Is it fun doing the show?
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Thank you. It's a delight. You know, it's my job to do these things with Bishop Barron, which I still can't believe that I get paid to record podcasts with Bishop Barron. It's a great joy.
Well, you do something that I think is really cool in radio is you'll take a piece or, you know, someone was talking somewhere or something and you kind of break it down soundbite by soundbite and you and Bishop Barron will kind of respond. Well, frankly, mostly you just set it up and Bishop Barron responds. But like this weekend, I was listening to the Neil deGrasse Tyson one, and it was just wonderful to hear. You know, Tyson is making certain statements about God and nature and all that, and Bishop Barron is breaking them down and explaining the Catholic view.
Yeah, that's part of the mission of Word on Fire, our ministry in general, which is to evangelize the culture, and especially the mission of the podcast you're referring to, the Word on Fire show.
Yeah.
We like to try to find seeds of the gospel within the culture. So the church fathers called them the seeds of the word. So where can you find little inklings of truth and goodness and beauty that you can then water and grow into the fullness of the gospel? So we try to find viral videos on Facebook, viral articles where people are talking about important subjects, and then find a way to get our foot in that door and then bring the gospel through it.
Yeah. You recommended to me, and I have not done it yet, that I find the one where Bill Nye, the science guy. So I'm going to find that one. But I just think that's great. I hadn't thought of it that it was a way of interacting with the culture and finding the seeds of the word there. But that it makes it so relevant and helpful to go, oh, yeah, this is a video everybody's seen on the internet. Now we'll kind of use that as the jumping off point to talk about the Catholic view and to talk about where you can find Christ and that and all that. So congratulations on great work there.
Oh, thank you.
Sharing your faith with clarity, calm, and joy. That's what you and Bishop Barron do. But give us some advice on that. Like, what's the? I mean, already I suppose we have some advice that we can find in the world around us, the material to start conversations with people. But what kind of advice do people get from you when they ask, Brandon, how can I share my faith with clarity, calm, and joy?
Yeah, I'd say that all three of those things are tied together, and they're particularly rooted in the first one, which is clarity. For years and years after I became Catholic, so I'm a convert to the Catholic Church, the first couple years after becoming Catholic, I was always really nervous, really worried whenever difficult conversations would come up about the church. People would bring up the abuse crisis or some minute theological objection that I couldn't answer. And I was always just sort of timid, nervous. I didn't want to enter those conversations. I certainly wasn't a particularly joyful and excited Catholic because I was just worried that I'd be put on the spot. But over the following years, I started to do a lot more reading, a lot more studying. I put myself into situations where I had to have conversations about these things with friends and family. And I developed a clarity that then made me calm and then gave me joy.
I
found that when you get clarity about what you believe, and even more than that, when you get clarity about the best objections to your belief and clarity about how to answer them, then you can't help but be calm and you can't help but be joyful because you're positive about what you believe, and you've heard all the best objections to it, so you have no reason to get frazzled whenever they come up. So I think clarity is the secret, really, to becoming calm and joyful as a Catholic.
Let me ask you this, though, because I think the one of the things that we face even more than being confronted on our faith is an indifference to our faith. How do you, what do you do to share the faith in the face of that indifference?
Yeah, that's a great question. In my experience, a lot of people are indifferent on the surface, but they're nevertheless concerned with the big questions of life. And I think that we just highlighted a great case. You know, we're talking about a Neil deGrasse Tyson video that has gone viral. It's got something like 4 million views, and he's talking about what happens after we die. So that's a fundamental question that has implications for all sorts of things. Anthropology, who we are as people, theology, what happens after we die. People are interested in listening to major thinkers and influencers answer these questions. And so the internet and social media has told me that even though people are indifferent on the surface in the sense that they won't actively seek out these important questions, they're nevertheless interested when they come up. And so the trick for Catholics is to get the foot in the door. You know, I used that analogy earlier. We just need to get our foot in the door to crack it open a little bit and open up a conversation about this stuff.
888-318-7884 is our number, 888-31-TRUTH. If you'd like to talk with Brandon Vaught about ideas for sharing your faith or becoming clear on your faith and sharing it with joy with other people, 888-318-7884. Brandon, before we go to those calls, though, I do want to ask you about what I call claritas you, but I think you're supposed to say claritas you. But this, whichever your pronunciation is, what's that all about?
Oh, thanks for asking. Claritas U is a new initiative. I just launched it a handful of months ago. That's kind of the culmination of all the work I've done over the past several years in evangelization and apologetics. Claritas U is an online membership site for Catholics who want to get clear and confident about the most difficult topics that they're confronted with. So things like atheism, same-sex marriage, science, transgenderism, a lot of these topics that when they come up, Catholics get nervous and afraid and tongue-tied. So at Claritas U, we have a series of video courses. We have experts that come in and help us out. We have a really vibrant community of over 2,000 people now. And so it's the central place online to find a community of people to help you get clear and confident about these important issues.
But it doesn't stay open forever. Like I got to sign up by a certain day.
That's right. Yeah. So Claritas U is kind of like a traditional college. We only open the doors twice each year, 1 week in the spring, usually in March, and then 1 week in the fall, usually around August, September. The other 50 weeks during the year, it's closed. And so right now, we're in the open enrollment week for the fall. So if you go to claritasu.com, so Claritas, like the Latin word for clarity, and then the letter U.com, you can sign up today. But if you wait, then in just a few days, the doors are going to close and you're going to get closed out and you won't be able to sign up for at least 6 months. So if that sounds intriguing to you, you need to go to claritasu.com today.
I just put two and two together, Brandon. The last time you were on was March. And now it's...
That's right.
And I'm guessing you're going to be on in March again next year. Oh,
we'll see.
I see what you're doing here. It's always the week when registration is open. All right. Claritasu, claritasu.com. When we come back from the break, I'll ask you... Well, at some point, I'll ask you about return, because that's another thing you're doing about helping parents draw their children or grandparents draw their grandchildren back to the church. And anybody who's got a question in that regard, give us a call as well. Brandon's happy to talk about that. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live, and we'll be right back.
This is Dale Alquist of the American Chesterton Society, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Are you coming to the Catholic Answers Conference this September?
You guys put on a great show, so it's well worth coming.
Very powerful, very motivational and moving.
I think it's awesome. It's been really amazing to get to know people from all across the country.
Every time somebody's speaker finishes, I feel like I want to cry just because of how happy I am.
It's been pretty phenomenal. Very educational, enlightening.
This year's conference is September 28th through the 30th here in beautiful San Diego, and we want to see you there. Seats are still available, but act now because they are going fast. Call us today at 1-888-291-8000 or visit CatholicAnswersConference.com now and reserve your spot.
This is where it starts, and it definitely has started for me.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpin. In Matthew 25, Jesus told his disciples the parable of the wise and foolish virgins. The wise brought flasks of oil with their lamps, while the foolish did not. When the bridegroom arrived, only the wise virgins had enough oil to light their lamps in the dark, and so leave for the wedding feast. Our Lord was concerned with more here than simply storing provisions for the future, but in being attentive to Him and prepared to meet Him at the proper time. We worry about being prepared for so many things, tornadoes, earthquakes, illness. How much time do we give to being prepared to meet Him face to face? The day is coming, and what a meeting that will be. The better we are acquainted with Him now, the more joyous will that meeting be. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to a frankly fantastic Friday issue, edition of Catholic Answers Live. I say issue because I come from the publishing world, Brandon. I always think of it as an issue, but it's an edition or an episode, and this is a really good Friday. I'm so happy that you're here with us, Brandon. Our topic, sharing your faith, really, and that's something Brandon does all the time with Word on Fire Ministries and in the various other things that he does. Well, how about we talk about return in a minute, only because the lines are absolutely full, Brandon.
Great.
So we'll go to those.
Sure. Sounds wonderful.
All right. Lewis in Longview, Texas, watching on YouTube. Hi, Lewis. Thanks for joining us on YouTube. Are you out of the flooding, Lewis?
Yes, sir.
All righty. Then your question for Brandon. We have to make sure you're safe first. That's like a rule. Now you can ask Brandon a question.
Well, my question is, how to explain the role of the papacy to Protestants and how it's biblical?
Yeah, it's a great question, Lewis. It's a timely one because for us Catholics, the gospel reading for this past Sunday was the very answer to this question. If you turn to the 16th chapter of Matthew, that's where you find Jesus telling Peter, "Peter, you are the rock, and on this rock I will build my church." And for centuries, dating back to the earliest Christians, this was read as an understanding that Peter would be the leader of Christ's church. But then even more right after that, in the very next verse, we read that Jesus tells Peter, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. And again, that line has been historically read to mean that Jesus is giving Peter his authority. Now, if you want even more beyond that, outside the Bible, read the writings of the early church fathers, and you'll see a consistent reference to the Bishop of Rome as the leader of the church. You'll see deference to that bishop in theological matters. And so we know from both the Bible and history that Peter and his successors, who are the bishops of Rome, were designated by Christ to be the leaders of the church. So that's a good starting point there. What do you think about that, Lewis?
That's a great point. I was thinking also one verse I could use when Jesus tells his disciples, "How my Father has sent me, I send you."
Yeah, that's another good one. That one's generally addressed to the disciples as a whole rather than to Peter in particular. But that's another good one if you're trying to defend, say, apostolic authority, that not just Peter, but these other apostles and their successors who are the bishops also share in this authority as well. And so the two are kind of a package deal. You have the Pope, but then you have his fellow bishops too, who are given similar authority. So yeah, I think there's many, many verses you could point to defend this central doctrine of the church.
Okay, Lewis?
Yes, sir. And I think it's in the book of Acts is whenever they replace an apostle, does it say that they are to be called bishops?
I'm not sure if it uses that word per se, but we know from history that apostolic succession can be traced back to the time of Acts, where we see bishops laying hands on each other and replacing each other. So we know that this line of apostolic authority was not supposed to just die out with the death of the last apostle, but was supposed to continue on. So I think it's important not to get hung up so much on the names of bishops or episcopacy or episcopa, but to realize to see the reality of this apostolic succession at play in both the Bible and in history.
Lewis, thank you very, very much for that call. Hope that was all helpful. What Texas is very, we got a lot of calls from Texas today. Jesus from that old Texas town of El Paso, listening on Guadalupe Radio. You are on with Brandon Vaught. What's your question, Jesus?
Okay. Yes. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, and this just something for me, because in the Apostles' Creed, it says, of course, that the Lord was crucified, died, and was buried, and then he descended into hell.
Yes.
What was the purpose of him going into hell?
That's a great question. The Catechism of the Catholic Church talks about this somewhere around the 600s, like 620 or 630, something like that. So go in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and you'll read the section in there on this part of the creed. And it says that Jesus descended into hell as a savior to preach the good news to those who had died and gone before him. You also find this echoed, by the way, in the letter of 1 Peter. 1 Peter 3:19 says the same thing, that Jesus preached the good news to the spirits imprisoned there. Does this mean that Jesus went down to save those who were damned? No. Does it mean that Jesus destroyed the hell of damnation? No. Scripture uses that word hell in a couple different ways. It usually in the Old Testament refers to Sheol, or the abode of the dead, which consisted of both the righteous and the unrighteous who were in there together. So in this line in the creed refers to Jesus going down into Sheol to preach the good news to the righteous and welcome them into his kingdom. So again, look at the Catechism of the Catholic Church. I don't have it right in front of me, but I think it's somewhere around paragraph 600, 620, something like that. And you'll find a good explanation of that part of the creed.
Okay, Jesus?
Okay. Yes, that's very good. Could you answer another question?
Sure, Jesus, real quick.
Sure.
I'm having a problem, not a problem, but I'm having kind of like a little duel with a former Catholic. Now she's a chiropractor, and she says...
Oh, she converted from Catholicism to chiropractic.
Well, do you have to make a formal act to do that? Is that you have to call the bishop?
Well, this is... she irritated me by saying that the Virgin Mary was just an ordinary woman. And I just shot back at her, and I said, well, what do you think? How about your mother? If somebody was talking about your mother or calling her a lowly person, what would you say? And she changed the subject. She said, no, we're not talking about my mother. We're talking about Jesus' mother. That's right. You're talking about God's mother. How can you belittle her? You know, my question about her anyway, about the Virgin, did she write the Magnificat?
That's a really interesting question. I was just looking into this the other day. So the Magnificat, of course, is found in Luke chapter 1. And many Catholics wonder, how could Mary possibly have spoken in such eloquent, poetic language? So was the Magnificat something that Luke came up with, or was he recording the accurate words that Mary spoke? We got to keep a couple things in mind before answering that. First of all, the Magnificat is an echo of the canticle of Hannah from the book of 1 Samuel. And so when Mary's singing the Magnificat, she's signaling that she is a new Hannah, which would mean that her son, Jesus, is a new Samuel. And so there's a theological significance to the words that she uses. And I think that's the important takeaway from the Magnificat. It's not, oh, look how beautiful these words are. It's, what are these words pointing to? That said, even though Mary was likely a young, illiterate girl, it is plausible to think that she would have been familiar with Hannah's canticle, and thus plausible to think that she could have spoken the Magnificat the way it's written down. But again, not super important whether these are the exact words that Mary spoke or whether Luke was exercising literary poetic flair. The important thing is that Mary's signaling herself as a new Hannah.
Thanks, Jesus. Thanks very much for that call. Diane in West Palm Beach, Florida, listening on Sacred Heart Radio. You are on with Brandon Vaught. What's your question?
Hi. I wanted to ask you, and thank you for your program. I really appreciate everything you do there. I wanted to ask you, for my first year as a catechist, I'll be teaching the elementary school catechism. The entire breadth of the faith, actually. I need a book that would be a reference book. I've gone online and I can't find what I need when I need it. So I'm looking for a book that I'm a convert. So, and I don't know the Bible verses the way a lot of Protestants do, or, you know, any. I just don't memorize Bible verses, but I want to be able to put my finger on where is that verse in the Bible? Just by reciting part of it, and then go and find that phrase in the Bible where it is. I got a concordance, and it doesn't really do the trick because it leaves out a lot of things, and I can't look up by the verse or by, say, a few key words in the verse. It won't do that for me.
Yeah, good question, Diane. I'd say a couple things. First of all, the internet is probably your best friend here. I'm not sure how tech savvy you are, but you can find anything in any part of the Bible using the internet in any translation. So you got dozens of translations of the Bible online. You have the entire Catechism of the Catholic Church online. And so if you're looking for a particular phrase in either of those sources, go on the internet and do a quick Google search, and that would be by far the quickest way to find what you need. Also, I'm a big fan of the Verbum software. It's a Catholic Bible software produced by Logos, and it has a tremendously powerful feature set where you install this on your computer and you can load it in with a library of Bibles and catechisms and other books. And then quickly you can search not just by topic, not just by biblical verse, but you can get even more granular than that and do different combinations of searches. So that probably would require a bit more technical expertise than just a simple Google search. So I'd start with the internet, just doing Google searches through the Bible or the catechism. But if you want to take it to the next level, Verbum is a great alternative.
Will that help you, Diane?
No. Well, what I was trying to say is that I use the internet a lot, and the Bible search there is insufficient for what I need, because it does, you know, you have to pinpoint exactly the Bible, you know, right, version I don't always know that.
I think what Brandon was saying, as far as the internet goes, you can just type whatever you know about a verse in the Bible, put it into Google, and it'll find that verse for you. If you want the approved Catholic version of it then, or something like that, you can go to the usccb.org. That's the bishop's website. They have the entire Bible there. Or one of those one of the Catholic websites. But Verbum is something different. Verbum is a system that, for searching, that you install, as Brandon said, on your computer. And it's Verbum, and lots of really smart people like Brandon swear by it. So I would give it. No, there are smart people like you, Brandon.
Yeah, others. Yeah.
Yeah, other people that are like you in other ways. But they're
that are also smart. That are, yeah.
I want to, Diane, thanks very much for that call. I got a minute before we go to the break, and don't go anywhere if you're on the line. We're going to get to your calls, 888-318-7884. But Return, tell us about Return. That's an internet thing.
Sure. Yeah. Return was a project I created a couple years ago with the sole mission of giving parents and grandparents tools to help them lead their children and grandchildren back to the church. Number one problem that I encounter when I go around the country is parents, you know, despairing over their kids who have left the church. So the Return Project, which you can find at returngameplan.com, has all sorts of resources, books, video courses, CDs, DVDs, to help lead young people back to the church.
All right. Say the website again real quick for people.
ReturnGamePlan.com.
888-318-7884 is our number. This is Catholic Answers Live. I am your host, Cy Kellett. In this hour, we talk about sharing your faith and sharing in a way that is both clear and joyful. Brandon Vaught does that every day in his work with Word on Fire and the various other apostolates that he is involved with. We will be right back with your calls for Brandon on sharing your faith right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
My husband was affected by Agent Orange and passed away last year. He and I were both Catholic. We both left the church, and I was his caregiver for, the last 5 years, although he was sicker for beyond that. And it did shake up my world. After he passed away, I realized I could go anywhere, and I came back to the church.
Monsignor Robert Hugh Benson's masterpiece, Lord of the World, is, in a word, prophetic. Originally published in 1907, it depicts a world where relativism has triumphed over objectivity, a world where, in the name of tolerance, religious doctrine is not tolerated. It is a world where euthanasia is practiced widely and religion hardly practiced at all. The lord of this nightmare world is a benign-looking politician intent on power in the name of peace and intent on the destruction of religion in the name of truth. Author Dale Alquist said it best, whether or not Monsignor Benson's picture of our future is accurate, the fact is his picture of our present is chillingly accurate. Recommended by Pope Benedict XVI and by Pope Francis, Lord of the World is a must-read. It's also the latest release in the Catholic Answers Classics series. Order your copy of Lord of the World now by calling 1-888-291-8000 or by visiting Catholic.com or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. So happy to have you here with us for this Friday, right before Labor Day weekend. We got some special programming on Labor Day. So while you're cooking those hot dogs or chilling out or relaxing or doing whatever you're doing, tune in for that Labor Day show. We're not going to run a rerun or anything. We got some really cool Labor Day stuff for you. 888-318-7884 is our number. Brandon Vaught is here with us from all kinds of things. We were just talking about Return and also Word on Fire Ministries with Bishop Barron. And we're taking any calls you've got on how to share the faith with clarity and joy. We go to Monica now in New Orleans, Louisiana, listening on Catholic Community Radio. Did you get hit there in New Orleans with all this rain, Monica?
I actually live in Lafitte, Louisiana, but I always say New Orleans because most people are familiar with New Orleans, but it's just about 20 minutes away. We did not get hit, thank God.
Are you on the other side of Lake Pontchartrain?
We are on the West Bank.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
West Bank. Yes.
I only know about that because I'm a big fan of Walker Percy. Do you know who Walker Percy is?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, a great Catholic novelist.
Sorry.
This is years ago. He lived down there on Lake Pontchartrain. I'm glad you didn't get swept away. What's your question for Brandon Vaught?
Okay. I'm trying to share the faith by being a catechist.
Great.
And I was really dumbfounded when I found out that some Catholics believe that, well, I guess we're allowed to believe the way they talked about it, that we're allowed to believe in evolution. I believed, and I was taught from kindergarten to eighth grade in Catholic school, that we came from Adam and Eve, and that was the story. And now I'm learning through going to classes that, we came from apes, and the only difference is God put a soul in one of them. And there was the first man, and I was completely floored, and I said, I'm not teaching my catechism students that way, so I'm just wondering, what is the way?
That's a great question and a loaded one, a controversial one. Let me say a few things. First of all, I think you were told correctly that the church doesn't have an official position or an official teaching on biological evolution, on whether various life forms developed over time. Even concerning human evolution, the church magisterially, meaning officially, is neutral, with a very important exception that even if man's body developed from previous biological forms, man's soul was a special creation by God. So the soul didn't develop out of natural causes. The soul's immaterial and was placed there by God. So the church has a wide umbrella. You can embrace evolution if you think the evidence points that way. You can reject it if you think the evidence points that way. But even within the umbrella of evolution, there are all sorts of different Catholics who hold different views. There are many forms of evolution. And so it's important to get into the particulars of what somebody particularly believes about it before you either accept it or toss it away. Let me give you a couple of resources, though, that I found very helpful on this question. The first one is probably the one you want to start with. It's Pope Pius XII's encyclical, Humanae Generis, which talks about the origins of man. And in there, I think it's sort of the foundational Catholic teaching on these questions. So you want to start there. It's a fairly simple and short read. It shouldn't take you too long. So start with that document so you can get the foundation. Then from there, if you're looking for some good books, let me recommend two. One is a book by Cardinal Christoph Schoenbrunn, and I think it's called Chance or Nothing, or Creation or Nothing, something to that effect. But he wrote a great book on evolution and the origins of man. So pick up Cardinal Schoenbrunn's book. And then finally, Pope Benedict XVI has a book that's sort of a collection of essays called In the Beginning. I believe he wrote it before he was Pope, and it was sort of based on a symposium held at the Vatican about the question of evolution, and then Joseph Ratzinger collected his thoughts. So pick up that book called In the Beginning, and I think these three resources will give you a much clearer picture about what the church does and does not teach about evolution.
Does that help you, Monica?
Yeah, I have one more little question, if you don't mind. I get, you know, different people's opinions, but then I also saw this YouTube video from IAN Catholic, and it was, speaking on the matter. And he was saying, well, if you kind of discredit the whole thing about Adam and Eve, you totally miss the original sin with, you know, the serpent, and it might not have been an apple, and I understand that, but you kind of missed that whole story of original sin.
Yeah, again, I'd point you to Pope Pius XII's encyclical, Humanae Generis, because he takes up the question of the historical importance of Adam and Eve. Also, there's a really, really good tract or article on Adam, Eve, and evolution on Catholic Answers website. So go to Catholic.com, search for either evolution or Adam and Eve, and you'll find a pretty lengthy but very clear and clarifying article on these questions, especially on the historicity of Adam and Eve. So I'd point you there.
Okay, Monica.
Okay, God bless you. Thank you.
You too. Thanks very, very much there. John. Right here in San Diego, John, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. John, your question for Brandon Vaught.
Yes, hi. Thanks for everything you guys do. You guys are a great resource. I'm a returning Catholic, cradle Catholic. But my question is, what can I do to ensure that my stepdaughter remains in the faith? She was baptized Catholic. She's a cradle Catholic. But we were in Washington, and we moved back down here to San Diego because of my job, and she stayed up there. And her boyfriend now is an atheist. And I think you answered part of my question with that resource that you said, returngameplan.com, with that resource. But the other part of it I'm thinking is how she is going to address the fact, you know, when her boyfriend may challenge her on her beliefs, you know, what should she do and what she needs to think about in the current situation that she's in, what she needs, how she can reflect on, what she needs to do to come closer to God and back to the faith.
Yeah, great question, John. Thanks so much. First, let me just affirm that you're not alone in asking these sorts of questions. Almost every day I talk with parents who ask similar things about their sons, their daughters, their stepsons, their stepdaughters. So this is a common question in the church. What can we do to ensure that our young people either stay in the faith or come back to the faith? That is why I wrote the book, Return, How to Draw Your Children Back to the Church. I put together a free video series that sums up a lot of what's in the Return book, and you can find that at helpthemreturn.com. So I think that free video series will help you out a lot. I picked up on, though, your comment that she was living with her atheist boyfriend. So it sounds like not just ambivalent, but perhaps is maybe antagonistic toward the idea of God. If that's the case, then I might recommend slipping your daughter a good resource that explains why it's reasonable to believe in God. There's lots of good stuff out there. A couple from Catholic Answers would be the 20 Answers booklet on God. Or it's a thin little booklet that is in a question and answer format. She could read it in maybe 20 or 30 minutes. Or Trent Horn's excellent book called Answering Atheism. Both of those would give her a firm foundation so that she would be able to answer any questions her boyfriend had. But it would also ensure that she doesn't sort of drift away because of where her boyfriend might be leading her. So I'd say for you, check out the Return resources, all the things I've mentioned so far. And then for her, maybe get her something that would help firm up her faith in God.
John?
Okay. That sounds great. Thanks for the tips and the resources. Is there any way that you could send me like a list of those? Because I don't have.
Hang on, John, give your email address to the call screener. And okay. John, the other thing is, these shows are archived, so you can always go back and listen. If you hear something like, "Oh, I wanted to know that resource,"
all right,
they get Nick archives them and puts. Nick is telling me in my ear. I had forgotten this part. They also list all the resources. Nick will list all the resources mentioned in that day's show where the show gets posted. So it's real quick for you there. But if you want to just leave your email address, I'll send you a note where you can get all these resources.
Okay, great. Okay. All right, thank you, John.
Okay, bye-bye. 888-318-7884, our number. Brandon Vaught, our guest, our topic, sharing your faith with clarity and joy. Catholic Answers Live, Friday edition. And I cannot remember when I've had such a pleasant Friday. Oh, maybe it was last week when Carla was here. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
Bringing you the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Bibles contain several books that aren't found in Protestant Bibles, and controversy has swirled around these books for hundreds of years. Protestant apologists often make charges like Catholics have violated God's Word by adding books to the Bible. Jesus and the apostles didn't honor these extra Catholic books. The New Testament never quotes these books, or the books contain clear historical and theological errors. Such arguments can catch Catholics flat-footed, leaving them not knowing how to understand. But now, Catholic Answers is coming out with a brand new edition of apologist Gary Machuda's classic work, Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger. In this new and improved edition, Gary exposes many commonly held myths and uncovers little-known and surprising facts concerning these books that Protestant Bibles have lost. Developing and distributing informative resources like Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger is the kind of effort your generosity makes possible. To make your donation and to get a free copy of Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger, visit Catholic.com and click the Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger banner, or call us toll-free at 888-291-8000. That's the Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger banner at Catholic.com, or call toll-free 888-291-8000.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. And at $3 a copy when purchased in bulk, it's perfect for parish distribution and any of your adult faith formation needs. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Having more fun than we should be allowed to have on a Friday here on Catholic Answers Live, taking your calls on how to share the faith this hour, 888-318-7884, our number. Brandon Vaught is our guest, and I'm just looking at the list here. Where shall I go? John in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, listening on 88.5 FM. John, your question for Brandon Vaught.
Hey, thanks very much. A man at work recently died, and he's Catholic, and his wish was to be cremated. And so we understood that, yes, that was okay, that he could be cremated. But then the priest said, but his ashes could not be scattered. They had to be kept together, and they could not be kept at home. They had to be either buried or interred in a sacred special place. And so then someone at work said to me, well, why is that? Because there are bone fragments of saints that people get that are there, John Paul's, whose blood is on tour here, or this sort of thing. And I couldn't answer it. And then a person said, well, that's just typical Catholic Church. They make up rules, but they don't follow them themselves. So I was like,
wait, was that person a Catholic who said that? And if you got a number, I'm calling that person.
Yeah.
Really?
No. I think it was a non-Catholic
okay.
or a former Catholic, and then you're like, I couldn't come up with an answer. So
All right.
When I heard your show, I thought, well, this would be a good time to ask.
That's a great question. Let me try to bite off a couple pieces of it. So the first part was, why does the church allow cremation, but it doesn't allow you to scatter the ashes? This has a long history. In the early church, cremation was considered to be part of a pagan ritual. So Christians didn't really practice cremation or spreading ashes because it destroyed and disassembled the body. And they thought it would make resurrection impossible because all of the material elements of your body were scattered. So how could they then be brought back together for the resurrection of the body? The church has seemed to sort of change this teaching. In 1965, there was a big change where the church formally allows cremation. However, the church has banned formally the scattering of ashes, and more so, as your friend rightly said, the ashes of the dead should be kept in a sealed container, such as an urn, but not in a house, in a place like a burial, like a crypt or a burial plot where it's guaranteed to be undisturbed. Now, why is that? Let's first answer that question, then we'll get to the saint question. The reason, again, is because the body is sacred, and keeping the material elements of the body together hints at this sanctity and this integrity of the body, that the body is deeply connected to us, isn't just insignificant matter that can be spread like the wind, but it's an integral whole that needs to be maintained for the resurrection of the body. It's a sign to the living that we believe this body will be reunited with its soul once again in the future. Now, to the question of the saints, I think this is a little bit of an apples and oranges comparison, because even with the saints, when we talk about the pieces of the saints being spread through the form of relics, generally, these are minuscule parts of a saint's body, like a fingernail or a very small sliver of skin that is spread for the sake of the church so that people can venerate this saint and ask their intercession. But the corpse is still substantially intact. So, for example, John Paul II's body, even though we do have relics that are circulating the world of his blood, we have small parts of his fingernails, we of course have second and third class relics, but his body is still entombed almost in whole in St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. And so with the saints, there's not an equivalency to scattering of ashes when we're talking about disseminating relics around the world. So that's maybe where I'd try to point the conversation. Now, again, we're talking about very minute details. If this is really a serious hang up for your friend and is a major reason why he's not becoming Catholic, maybe try to see if there's a deeper thing that's really pressing him, especially if he makes a comment like, why is the church always making up rules that it then doesn't follow? I would maybe talk through this one a little bit, but then say, did you have something else in mind though? It sounds like there's maybe a bigger rule or a bigger doctrine that you're troubled with, because the scattering of ashes isn't a central doctrine of the Catholic Church.
Okay, John?
That's a good idea. I need to talk to him. So under that theory, then, they could take a small portion of this person's ashes and sprinkle it, because it's not, the you know, like you said, like a tiny little bit.
Well, I'm a little out of my depth here, but I think officially you would need permission from the church, whether that be a diocese or somebody else, in order to even acquire a relic. So relics are usually acquired during the beatification or the canonization of a saint, and they're done under extremely careful and moderated conditions. I don't think the church would permit, say, me or you grabbing a small piece of our father's body and cutting off a finger and enshrining it in our home. It's a bit different than venerating the relic of a saint. So it's a good question. I would suggest maybe talking to a priest or a diocese if it's a serious concern about whether you can honor or venerate a piece of a dead relative.
Thanks, John. Thanks very much. Hope that conversation goes well with your friend. Michael in Birmingham, Alabama, listening on Guadalupe Radio. You are on with Brandon Vaught. What's your question for Brandon?
Thank you guys for taking my call. And I'm pressed for time, so I'm just going to ask my question and then hang up and listen on the radio.
Okay.
So I've been a Catholic all my life, and I'm struggling with my faith and believing in God. I believe that He has a love, like, personally for me. And I've actually been to seminary. I was a seminarian, and I this question has been in my mind just. You know, why am I a Christian? And I wanted to ask, like, you, Brandon, like, you know, if someone in the show's topic about, sharing your faith, if someone were to come up to you and say, Brandon, why are you Christian? You know, what would you say to that? And I, you know, that would be, you know, compelling and cause I'm asking myself that, and I'm like, well, I don't know why I'm Christian, you know, and maybe I do have reasons, but I'm like, you know, it's almost not convincing, I guess, enough to me. And so I just wanted to know your answer.
Yeah. Thanks so much for that, Michael. And thanks for your vulnerability. First of all, let me just affirm that Jesus does love you. God loves you. I think the clearest affirmation of that is what He did on the cross for you. You know, it was Augustine who said that Christ died for all of us as if we were the only one here. He would have died for you, even if you were the only one. So God loves you. So don't forget that. I think if somebody asked me, why are you Christian? I'd give the same answer that G.K. Chesterton gave to the question, why are you Catholic? He said, ultimately, there are thousands of reasons that amount to one reason, because it's true. And that's what I'd say if somebody asked me, why are you a Christian? Well, because Christianity is true. And what would I do to defend that? Well, I would make two cases. First, that God exists. I think we have very good reasons to believe that God exists. Second, I think we have very good reasons to believe that Jesus is God. And if those two things are true, then Christianity is true. Christianity, unlike any other religion, believes that Jesus is not just a good man, not just a wise teacher, but is God. He's divine. And so if we can prove those two things, then we got good reason to think Christianity is true. Now, there are lots of lines of evidence to support each of those two statements. We've talked about the first one a little bit so far, atheism. How do you show that God is real, that God exists? And I mentioned a few good resources to help with that already. Trent Horn's book, Answering Atheism, does a great job. Catholic Answers has a nice little booklet called 20 Answers God to help show you the good reasons why God exists. But then the question of Jesus, which is more central to this why Christianity question, focus on the resurrection, the resurrection, the resurrection. As Paul says, if the resurrection is false, our faith is in vain. So everything hinges on whether Jesus really rose from the dead. And again, I think we got strong reasons to believe that the resurrection is a historical fact. One good book on that is called The Case for the Resurrection. It's by Gary Habermas. He's a Protestant scholar, but he makes, I think, an airtight case that the resurrection best explains the historical facts that we know about Jesus's last days on earth. And so check out that book. But what you want to do is realize the truth of Christianity. It doesn't hinge on how I feel about it. Some days I feel it might be true. Some days I'm having, you know, emotional worries and doubts. Lock yourself into the truth of it and read apologetical books, read good arguments for Christianity. That'll strengthen your faith and squeeze out the doubts. So that's probably what I'd recommend.
Michael, thank you very much for that call. Coming up near the top of the hour, so I'm going to just move quickly through the calls. Sarah in Mansfield, Ohio, watching on YouTube. You are on with Brandon Vaught. What's your question?
Hi. So I was having a discussion with a Protestant the other day, and I asked him what he had a problem with this particular video that I showed him. And without even making reference to the video itself, he just named all the problems that Protestants have with Catholicism. And so it kind of had this question in my mind of what the best way to go about it would be as far as explaining some of these things, like if it would be biblically or to show some theology or just different things. Just different ways to approach it. I actually just today got in the mail that How Not to Share Your Faith by Mark Brumley. So I haven't had a chance to get into that, but I just saw the topic of today's show and I wanted to call and see what your advice was on that.
Well, thanks, Sarah. It's a great question. You know, I'm a former Protestant, so I've kind of been on both sides of the Tiber. And so I get it. I know the long list of objections that Protestants will give to the Catholic Church. In my experience, the best approach is not to get into the weeds of each of these individual objections. So they'll say, explain this doctrine. It's not in the Bible. Well, you could go to the Bible and find explicit or implicit evidence for it. But you're going to be just moving in circles and you're not going to make much headway. Instead, you want to sidestep all of those issues and get to the fundamental divide between Catholics and Protestants, which concerns the question of authority. Authority. Who has the authority to speak in the name of God? Many Protestants will say that the Bible is the sole authority, that the sole rule of faith. It's the final authority. We Catholics believe that the Bible is an authority, but so is the church, and so is our sacred tradition, so is our living magisterium. Catholics also believe that the Bible gets its authority from the church, that the Bible emerged from the church. It's a church document. It was meant as a liturgical document to be read in the liturgy. And the only way that we know the biblical books we have are inspired by God, the only way we know that they have authority is through the church's authority. And that might be a complicated thing. We could talk about it for a lot longer here. And I know you got Mark Brumley's excellent book, which I recommend. It'll give you a lot of practical strategies for handling apologetical conversations. Let me recommend one more, though. My good friend Devin Rose wrote a very helpful book called Navigating the Tiber, which will help give you some practical things to say to your Protestant loved ones and friends. And so that book is a great reference, and I think it'll help you a lot.
Sarah, thank you very, very much. I think Mark Brumley's book is also called Seven Deadly Sins of Apologetics. And
yes.
anybody who listens whenever Mark is on knows that I get that wrong every time. Brandon Vaught, thanks so much for being with us. That hour just flew by with you.
It did. Thanks, Si. I had a great time.
It seems like you enjoy this stuff. I want to give out all the websites. First of all, until September 7th, people can sign up for Claritas U, and they just go to claritasu.com.
Is that correct? You got it.
And the other one for parents and grandparents, you say it, that want to help their children.
Yeah, I have a free video series at helpthemreturn.com, and then you can find the book at returngameplan.com.
Brandon Vaught, thanks again for being with us. Next hour, Christopher Bloom with his new book, A Mind at Peace, Reclaiming an Ordered Soul in an Age of Distraction, right here on Catholic Answers Live, right after this.